Chapter 25 Miscellaneous Writings. Now you give us the impersonal teacher. E. P. Bates, 1896. The printer's imprint in Science and Health, ever since the third edition in 1881, had been University Press, John Wilson and Son, Cambridge. And over those 15 years, Mrs. Eddy and Mr. Wilson, the son, who, like his Scottish father, was a fine printer and a, quote, vera godly man, end quote, had become dear friends. But though the imprint was the same in 1896, the university press was not. The junior, John Wilson's integrity and high professional standards had increased the enterprise his father had begun into a very large manufacturing concern with a bright horizon. So it was a devastating shock to him in 1894 when the financial structure collapsed. This was due to the mismanagement of Mr. Wilson's partner, whom he had trusted implicitly and who had complete charge of the financial affairs. One of the first things John Wilson did amid the ruin was to send his young protege, William Dana Orcutt, to Pleasant View to tell Mrs. Eddy personally that the wretched affair was not of his doing. He could not bear to lose her respect and her friendship. Mrs. Eddy's response was, quote, "We must think of John Wilson first, and the business afterwards. Does he need immediate cash? Of course he does. I shall send him a check by you, and especially a message. Tell him to be of good cheer. What he has given of himself to others all these years must now return to him a thousandfold." End quote. In the reorganization which followed, Mr. Wilson was given 45% of the stock and the presidency of the new corporation, but it was an unhappy situation to which he could not adjust, though he tried to do so for the next 2 or 3 years. During this period, a notice that appeared often in the Christian Science Journal stated, quote, "We desire to obtain the following copies of the journal to complete volumes for binding," end quote. The demand for complete sets far exceeded the supply, for many students wanted copies of the leader's early articles. Mr. Bates approached Mrs. Eddy regarding having the publishing society republish the early issues, but her response was in the negative. "Wait," she said. "I am getting out a book which will include all those articles of mine, as well as some of my addresses and sermons, and that will take their place." Perhaps the situation at the university press had something to do with Mrs. Eddy's message to Mr. Bates in the fall of 1896 to enlarge the publishing facilities at 95 Falmouth Street by buying and connecting number 97 and to equip the new rooms with a linotype machine, etc. Many of the students' contributions in the early journals were immature, and the leader did not wish to reproduce them, but a good many of her own articles had been written in such haste due to the unceasing demands upon her time that they greatly needed revision before being republished. Collecting, arranging, and revising her writings of the past 14 years was no small chore, she would have welcomed the literary assistance of James Wiggin, but that gentleman's thought had grown so impure as to overbalance his excellent scholarship, thus nullifying his ability to aid her. Several years earlier, the leader had been impressed by the work of Miss Jessie Gorham, a young Scottish Christian Scientist, in her capacity as assistant editor of the journal. So she engaged Miss Gorham as assistant and advisor when she began work on the compilation of her writings. It was never easy for anyone to work with Mrs. Eddy, for as she wrote to her, quote, precious Highland lassie, end quote, my earth life is that of a weathercock. It turns, veers, and stops with the winds of circumstance. And again, so many varying winds blow that the weather vane flies hither and thither. My life work is never tranquil or assured except in its finale. To overcome Miss Gorham's timidity, Mrs. Eddy encouraged her to work with a free hand. But as the work progressed, she changed the procedure with her darling Jessie. Your last copy shows me it is wise for me to look over the copy first and you afterwards. None but the author sees certain needs in the copy, and the less written by any other person, the better. Why? Because I say things from a different standpoint than another person can, and this person can see the grammar that I have measurably forgotten, but cannot see my vision of the new tongue and of the human need. If Jessie was able to be tranquil in her work, it was with great difficulty, and as others became involved with the publication, she needed the reassurance Mrs. Eddy wrote to her. Mother knows what cyclones, orders, counter-orders, and utter disregard of what is the straight line always has occurred when a book of great power has been published by her. So, dear one, she is used to it and loves Jessie and always shall love her. The cyclones were a new experience for Jessie, but some of the others involved with the work had seen such tempests before. In the summer before the storm, Clara Shannon had returned to her home in Canada for one day and then gone right back to Pleasant View, where she stayed for several years as one of Mrs. Eddy's closest helpers. In later years, Miss Shannon treasured a keepsake from the winter of 1896. It was a small bundle of fountain pens with which Mrs. Eddy corrected the proofs of miscellaneous writings, while Clara and Calvin Fry did their utmost to aid her in her work. These months were a very wearing, trying, never-to-be-forgotten time for these two devoted disciples. As the workers at the Publishing Society would begin work on the new book, the linotype machine would break down, and they would start work on another machine, only to have it break down. Constant work against malicious animal magnetism had to be done in order to make any progress at all. And such workers as Mr. and Mrs. Knapp were kept busy at all hours. Few in the field had any idea of the mother's toil, anguish, and travail in giving such a gift to the world. But Clara and Calvin knew, for they kept watch at Pleasant View alternately every other hour, day and night, week after weary week, that the book might be printed. Little wonder that after writing in the preface that she had tried to remove the pioneer signs and ensigns of war, Mrs. Eddy added, quote, "With armor on, I continue the march," end quote. The leader was a veteran who was never off duty, and Calvin and Clara were beginning to learn what such warfare meant. To the Knapps, following publication, Mrs. Eddy wrote, quote, "Mr. Fry and Miss Shannon are happy with the new book, and they are growing apace," end quote. Edward Bates was another worker who was well aware of the trials encountered and the resistance to be met before Miscellaneous Writings was finally published. The enlarged facilities were ready for Mrs. Eddy's work. A linotype operator had been engaged, as well as a very competent foreman printer, and the copy had arrived to be set up when Mr. Bates had to go to Syracuse. He was astounded on his return to Boston to find that nothing had been accomplished. With his help, they were soon turning out some work, but Mrs. Eddy told him that it was not going fast enough. She also said to Mr. Bates, "The people are ready for my book, and it must come out. Do all you can to advance it." John Wilson, though never becoming a Christian Scientist, had taken a very personal interest in Mrs. Eddy's work, beyond that of the other authors whose works he printed. Now she wanted him to have a part in this new book. Perhaps Mr. Wilson needed Mrs. Eddy's support at this period of his experience, as much as his expert advice was needed by the Publishing Society. There is no doubt that it was mutually beneficial. The daily procedure was that as soon as impressions were taken from the plates, they were read, corrected, and proofs taken to Mr. Wilson for him to read and correct. Mrs. Eddy worked at all and any hours, and those who were really a help to her in her great work for the world were willing to do the same. To Mr. Bates, her word was law, and when she had asked him to do all he could to advance the work on her book, he dedicated himself to the task, spending most of his time at the publishing house from then on. It was between 11 p.m. and 1 a.m. each day before the proof sheets were ready, and at that late hour, Edward Bates would take them to Mr. Wilson and wait for his corrections, then return to the publishing house and see that the corrections were made. About 5 a.m., a messenger would start for Pleasant View to submit that day's proofs to Mrs. Eddy, and by 6 a.m., Edward could go home for a bite to eat and 2 or 3 hours' sleep. This was daily routine for several weeks. After having read a large part of the proofs, Mr. Wilson said to Mr. Bates, quote, "This will be a valuable book, and Mrs. Eddy will have a great sale of it," end quote. No doubt it did much to sustain John Wilson in his trials. Metaphysical truths did much to sustain Edward Bates, literally, during these difficult weeks, for at times when he went home, there was no food in the house. Their 2 maids were taken seriously ill at the peak of the work on Miscellaneous Writings, and Mrs. Bates was up night and day caring for them. There was no time for shopping, cooking, or restaurants, but the work went on, and Mrs. Bates brought the girls through about the same time that the book was completed. Though the storms surrounding the new book presented some of the workers with life and death struggles, they were mild when compared with some that Mrs. Eddy had encountered in the publishing and revising of Science and Health. Also, as she said to Miss Gorham, she was used to it. She had learned to keep on, despite the storms and obstacles. So when the Boston Herald sent a query to the large number of prominent ministers of the gospel, Mrs. Eddy took the time to answer their question. In the Sunday Herald of October 18, where published the responses from 28 ministers to the query, quote, "Which is your favorite passage in the Bible?" unquote, each including their reasons for their preference. Mrs. Eddy's response was, quote, "Thou shalt have no other gods before me," end quote, is my favorite text. It inculcates the Trinity of God, Spirit, Mind, signifies that man shall have no other spirit or mind but eternal good. This divine principle bases the science of being, whereby man demonstrates health, holiness, immortality. One God unifies men and nations, ends wars, constitutes the brotherhood of man, fulfills the scripture, "Love thy neighbor as thyself," annihilates pagan and Christian idolatry, social, civil, criminal, political, and religious codes, makes equal the sexes, annuls the curse on man, and leaves nothing that can sin, suffer, perish, or be punished. Soon after, and slightly revised, this paragraph was added to the chapter Science of Being in Science and Health. Another article from Mrs. Eddy's pen appeared in the October issue of the Granite Monthly of Concord, New Hampshire, while a letter to her students, miscellaneous page 125, read at the fourth annual meeting of the Mother Church on the 6th of October, remains as pertinent and helpful to students today as it was on that Tuesday afternoon. "Who hath not learned that when alone he has his own thoughts to guard, and when struggling with mankind, his temper, and in society, his tongue? No reproof is so potent as the silent lesson of a good example. One thing I have greatly desired, and again earnestly request, namely, that Christian Scientists here and elsewhere pray daily for themselves. The human heart, like a feather bed, needs often to be stirred, sometimes roughly, and given a variety of turns, else it grows hard and uncomfortable whereon to repose." In September, Mrs. Eddy had asked the directors to relieve her of the responsibility of her real estate in Boston by leasing her house on Commonwealth Avenue for the exclusive use of the first reader and family and present occupant, Judge Hannah. In her letter of thanks, she wrote, "When the Reverend Mr. Norcross went out of the city proper to make his home, it worked ill for him and the church. Keep the judge in Boston near the church as long as he acts wisely and does as much good as at present. Be sure. With tender thanks for your kind help in relieving me of the care and burden of real estate." Before the end of October, she felt it necessary to remind the directors that she had discounted the rental on her house to $2,000 per annum, when the one next door to hers rented for $3,000 per year. She began this letter of reproof, quote, "God has spoken to me on fat salaries, and to the end that they are too big in some cases in carrying out the offices of church members," end quote. Mrs. Eddy was well aware that the members should support the church and not vice versa. Fat salaries for officials in the church are a prelude to fat salaries for politicians in the government. On November 2nd, Mrs. Eddy obtained a copyright for the title Repaid Pages. Some historians say this was the title originally planned for the compilation of miscellaneous writings, which was soon published as Miscellaneous Writings. Others have thought it applied to a group of essays written by Mrs. Eddy at Concord, which were not included in Miscellaneous Writings, nor published at that time. Today, the title is applied to the latter category. In December, the first members made Mrs. Eddy a Christmas gift of a lovely clock. One student has written, quote, "The first members spent $1,000 to give her a beautiful clock, and in return, she gave them $1 million worth of spiritual advice," end quote. There is every evidence in the leader's response that the students had worked scientifically to make this gift an offering from love. With previous costly gifts, that had not always been the case. Mrs. Eddy was ever sensitive to mental atmosphere, and when mortal mind had the ascendancy, it could not long remain hidden from her, and would make costly gifts less acceptable. The summer following the erection of the Mother Church, the students had sent a gift of expensive Oriental rugs for her home. On the 8th of June in that year, 1895, the leader had written to her beloved church, "Your exquisite addition to the finest manufacturers of Persia is safely put in its place in my home, Pleasant View. I did not dream of the value of these royal rugs until Mrs. Kimball told my household. I estimated the one that hangs in the library at $1,000, but was afterwards told it was $300, and next by Mrs. Kimball, $3,000. What a price! What a gift! What a type of your estimate of Christian Science! God's gift to you, and my lifelong purchase for you. Please send me nothing more of this earth, but send a token of heaven as often as you please." In other words, love one for another. In August, she had found it necessary to correct the animus back of other expenditures and mistakes, And in this uncovering of mesmerism to the directors, she could not exclude their previous munificent gift. Again, I must tell you that your royal gift of rugs that are so beautiful, and all of which I so appreciate from my beloved church, was started by the thought and for the purpose of theosophy. Hence, my first feeling when the first ones came to my house was from the right side. It was a feeling I do not want them around my house. But I have conquered this feeling, and also their motives so far as to have no thought or care about matter or its pros and cons. Still, I intend to send them sooner or later to 385 Commonwealth Avenue, Boston. The moral of my letter is to help you, dear ones. Before you act again, watch and pray that you enter not into their temptation. I am much wiser from what God has taught me, and you certainly will be. The mesmerists carry their points more or less every time, and with all the students, and Mother has to go over the ground and patch up the fissures as best she can. Quote, "These things ought not so to be." End quote. Their purpose is to disgrace us and squander the church funds. Note this every time you take $1 out of this fund. On the very next day, August 19, 1895, she shared the burden of the rugs with the directors. "To relieve me of some worldly care, I ship to you in care of Mr. Moore 4 of my Persian rugs with this request. Will each of the directors take one of these rugs to his home, use it and care for it, and keep it until Mother calls for it. Do not remove the labels. I shall keep in Concord 6 of these rugs and send to Commonwealth Avenue 4 to be taken good care of till I call for them." That the first members had made much metaphysical progress between the gift of rugs 1.5 years earlier and the gift of the clock seems evident from the leader's letter of thanks for the latter, written on the last day of 1896. "For your last Christmas gift, I feel quite bankrupt in thanks. You have made me a timely present, one that gives a new tongue to time, that calls my attention to the loss of moments and to the gain of what is timeless, even eternity. It speaks to me in cathedral tones of the Mother Church, the temple of our God, and of the dear worshipers therein. Although I am not with you as of old, the music of mind is not missing, and the chiming of our thoughts calls us together in one general assembly, where hearts keep time in love one for another. The blessings vouchsafed to us as a denomination are superabundant. The uplifted cry of the people seems poured forth with this one utterance. Quote, "Give us to know Christian Science, to know more of soul, man's origin and being." End quote. We cannot sufficiently thank God for all his great goodness to us. but we can acknowledge this by conforming our lives more to the divine image and thereby feebly expressing his praise. I feel a great sense of gratitude to you for what you are trying to do and have already done. From the depths of a loving, lonely heart, I thank you for your rare Christmas gift to me and for your labors in the vineyard of our Lord. A nota bene on this letter of December 31st named four young students, together with reasons for selecting them, first members. I herewith recommend the following four candidates for first members of the Mother Church. First, for their faithfulness in the field. Second, for the advantage to them individually. Third, from a desire to have them grow up with the first members of the Mother Church, who receive more directly my counsel and assistance. James A. Neal, Carol Norton, John Carroll Lathrop, Daphne S. Knapp. These four young students were all members of Mrs. Eddy's last class 2 years later. Before the close of 1896, Miscellaneous Writings was copyrighted, and in January of the new year, Mrs. Eddy wrote her last words for the new book, the preface. She also wrote a letter to James Neal in January, which has been as great an inspiration to others as it surely was to James in 1897. Though not included in her published writings, it has seen wide circulation. Your letter is my best New Year's gift. I had felt for some time the fitness you possessed for healing. I knew it when you were a member of my college class. It looked a waste of your talents to have you in a counting room. Now, thank God, I have at least one student in Boston that promises to be a healer, such as I have long waited and hope to see. Oh, may the love that looks on you and all guide your every thought and act up to the impersonal, spiritual model that is the only ideal and constitutes the only scientific healer. To this glorious end, I ask you to still press on and have no other ambition or aim. A real scientific healer is the highest position attainable in this sphere of being. Its altitude is far above a teacher or preacher. It includes all that is divinely high and holy. Darling James, leave behind all else and strive for this great achievement. Mother sighs to see how much her students need this attainment and longs to live to see one Christian Scientist attain it. Your aid to reach this goal is spiritualization. To achieve this, you must have one God, one affection, one way, one mind. Society, flattery, popularity are temptations in your pursuit of growth spiritual. Avoid them as much as in you lies. Pray daily. Never miss praying, no matter how often. Quote, lead me not into temptation, end quote. Scientifically rendered, lead me not to lose sight of strict purity, clean, pure thoughts. Let all my thoughts and aims be high, unselfish, charitable, meek, spiritually minded. With this altitude of thought, your mind is losing materiality and gaining spirituality. And this is the state of mind that heals the sick. My new book will do you much good. Do not purchase one. Mother wants to give you one. I welcome you into the sanctum of my fold. God bless you. Before the 28th of January, when Mrs. Eddy wrote this letter to James Neal, the Publishing Society had announced that they expected a new book by Mrs. Eddy, titled Miscellaneous Writings, to be in the hands of Mr. Armstrong for distribution by the 10th of February. 25,000 copies were ordered and paid for before the book came off the press, and no one worked harder to meet the February 10th deadline than did Edward Bates. His letter of February 11th was probably the first letter of appreciation to Mrs. Eddy for the new volume. Dear Mother, to me, and I believe to the world, February 10th, 1897, is a red letter day in Christian Science. On this day, the first edition of Miscellaneous Writings was delivered at our publishing house in Boston, and through the publisher, Mr. Armstrong, distributed to all parts of our country and to some foreign points. I believe I realize the truth of the following passage in Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures, today as never before. Quote, divine love always has met and always will meet every human need. End quote. 2 years ago, you gave us the impersonal pastor for our mother church, and soon afterward, the same pastor was appointed for all the branch churches. Now you give us the impersonal teacher. I wish I might find words adequate to express all that I feel in receiving this last great gift from you. I am so much rejoiced to have assembled with other articles your letters to the church, to the first members, your sermons in the early days, as well as all the other warnings, admonitions, and wise counselings. I had never dared to hope for all this in a book which I could take in my hands and call my own. God is better to us than we ask or think. After reading Miscellaneous Writings, one is impressed with the great fact that God has done this by the hand of His anointed. One more delightful experience in reading this book is that it takes us back to the classes in the Massachusetts Metaphysical College, and it seems as though we were sitting at your feet and being taught directly by you. Then again, what a blessing to those who were unable to enter your college, but have waited long years to do so. To them you speak, as of old you spake to your students who were present. And these brothers and sisters who have been waiting and longing for this day are now fed, not with crumbs, but with meat from the table of our God, who is life, truth, and love. Your affectionate student, Edward P. Bates. Mrs. Eddy well knew the mission of her new book, to carry on where she had left off at the closing of her college in 1889. A notice in the March Journal stated, notice, the Christian Scientists in the United States and Canada are hereby enjoined not to teach a student Christian Science for 1 year, commencing on March 14, 1897. Miscellaneous writings is calculated to prepare the minds of all true thinkers to understand the Christian Science textbook more correctly than a student can. The Bible, Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures, and my other published works are the only proper instructors for this hour. It shall be the duty of all Christian Scientists to circulate and to sell as many of these books as they can. If a member of the First Church of Christ Scientist shall fail to obey this injunction, it will render him liable to lose his membership in this church. Mary Baker Eddy. The teacher's stern message indicates the importance of her command, and perhaps the casualness with which many students regard her instructions. She had never been happy with the teaching in the field, not even that of her own very best normal students. But the people clamored for teaching and flocked to the mercenary imitators, so she had done her best to fill the need of the hour. Nevertheless, the teachers and teaching were a suffered to be so now concession, even as was the organization of churches. Now she had the solution to this problem, which is calculated to prepare the minds of all true thinkers to understand the Christian Science textbook more correctly than a student can. End quote. Today, as in the 19th century, students who long to sit at the feet of Mary Baker Eddy can do so through the pages of miscellaneous writings. Science and Health is the little book from the hand of the angel, but miscellaneous writings is the human teacher that aids the pupil in his efforts to understand this message from God.